Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special episode of A Shot of Business Central and a Beer. We've got news, AI happenings, and a special treat for you. Get ready for an epic showdown as our host, Ken, takes on the maestro of MRP in a no-holds-barred, non-sanctioned MRP cage match.
Hey everybody, Ken here, and I'm thrilled to be your co-pilot on this journey through the latest Business Central buzz. Joining us today is the MRP maestro himself, Mark Hike. Mark, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Ken. It's an honor to be here. I'm ready to tackle you and everything else MRP.
Whoa, it's already getting heated. Make sure to hold on to your seats, everyone, because Ken and Mark are ready to go head-to-head in a battle of wits to see who can come up with the ultimate MRP automation strategies for Business Central. Rules? Nobody needs rules.
At the end of this showdown, we might be a little battered and a little bloodied, but only one of us will emerge victorious as the MRP Master Champion.
So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and get ready for a showdown like no other. Let the MRP cage match begin.
A shot of Business Central and a beer starts now.
Let's talk beer then. What do we got here? We got
What we got? You tell me.
I'll tell you. Yeah, went to Binny's, walked around, saw 5,000 beers and 4,500 for some reason. Like you said, all look the same. Honestly, I was looking to find some sort of pumpkin beer because we've had such a bad experience thanks to our guest years ago, and I wanted to alleviate that. But I settled on a peanut butter milk stout, nitro beer. By Left Hand Brewing Company. I've never had a peanut butter beer before. I don't know much about them. I don't know if you guys have ever had any peanut butter beers.
I have. I've tried a couple different peanut butter beers. This one actually is one of the ones I've tried. It's a very good beer.
This will be my first. I'm a peanut butter beer virgin.
So am I. But so with this beer, well, we got to click the top off and we got to pour it hard.
So they that's say? Like because of the nitro.
Yeah,
because it releases all that carbonation or whatever in the into the
mix. Yeah, I'm scared. Is it gonna overflow? Let's find out. Oh,
second. We kind of had to delay the start of the podcast a little bit because we realized that the recommended temperature to pour the beer is 40 to 45 degrees, and then the serving temperature is 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit, which is much warmer than a typical American lager or Belgian pilsner.
Yeah, I'm not a biggest beer connoisseur, so I don't know if I will mess with all that kind of temperatures and whatnot.
So there we go. I poured it hard. It went pretty hard in there. I gotta say,
not as much foam
carbonation, right? Carbonation's a lot less than I thought.
You watch the nitro, you can looks almost like a Guinness as it goes.
Oh, yeah, look at that. It's beautiful.
Yes.
The cascading carbonation there on the side of the glass.
We might have a beer that actually tastes how it's supposed to. It smells peanut buttery.
Pretty good. Doing my hard pour, I splashed it all over the place here.
So do we dive in or do we wait till it just dive in?
Yeah, it kind of does look just like a Guinness now with about half inch to an inch ahead on the top. The cascading has died down.
Dark color, all that good stuff.
Let's do it.
Let's give it a sip.
Yeah. Picking up the peanut butter, definitely in the smell.
It's got a peanut buttery taste. I would say this is a really good fall beer.
It is. Yeah. Kind of like it.
So it must be a nitro thing where they're smooth, where beers aren't carbonated if it's nitro. It's just.
That's creamy. It kind of gives it that creamy texture.
Right.
Mouthfeel, as they say. So I did notice originally, I didn't look and I'm looking now, but I can tell that it's not a strong beer.
It was my second choice.
Well,
the first one was higher. It was like 8.9.
Yeah,
and I was like,
6.2. percent. So that's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, right in your wheelhouse. Low IBUs, 25. And then it's got a, on Beer Advocate, it's got a score of 85, which is decent. Average rating 3.79 out of 5. And I was looking through the reviews, and there were some good ones, some funny ones. You know, these Beer Advocate people. You ever go on Beer Advocate, Mark?
Never.
If it's not 100% craft beer, like the perception of people think it is, they just rip it apart, right? So if it's Modelo, then, you know, whatever it is, just it's terrible. So this one, I get a 3.79. I picture this as a true craft beer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got flavors in it. It's from a smaller brewery, I think.
Yes, I would consider this a craft beer. I typically nowadays drink craft beers, so try something new every week. That's why I've tried this one. And yeah, I would definitely consider a craft beer. And as we look at it, it actually fits the description, right? So many times you try these flavorful beers that taste nothing like they are. This one smells and has a taste of peanut butter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I saw a score, overall score of 90 on Beer Advocate.
Really?
Is what I saw. Maybe I misread that. But then it said outstanding on it. And my first reaction was, of course, because it's a super crafty beer. So even though if you read through the detailed comments that people left, they weren't overwhelmed. They didn't leave outstanding comments. They were good comments, but they weren't like over the top, glow, you know, just saying this was
for being a pure craft beer. You think it would?
Yeah, there was some, you know, it doesn't have as much carbonation as I thought, not as much peanut butter in the taste. Things like that.
I would say this beer has more peanut butter taste than I would have thought. I think I'd probably like even a little bit more. But beers, for some reason, you never really get as much as.
Yeah, definitely said it's a dessert beer, right? People called it a dessert beer. And what do you think about the smell versus the taste? That was kind of the big, I saw a couple of feedbacks where it said it smells like a peanut butter cup.
Right.
With, you know, peanut butter, chocolate, sugar. But the taste is more coffee-ish and less peanut buttery.
Yeah, the taste doesn't match the smell exactly. I mean, it has some peanut butter in it, but it's the taste just isn't as strong as...
Yeah, the smell is, you smell peanut butter right off the bat.
Well, maybe as it warms up a little bit, because I don't think we're at 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's true too, yeah.
So maybe that flavor will come out more.
Yeah.
As it warms up a little bit, just to put it into perspective. So this saying this 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit is what that they recommend this be served at. An American mainstream light lager is 33 to 40 degrees.
Really?
A pale lager or pilsner is 38 to 45. What else we got here? Like a Belgian ale or Trappist ale, like 40 to 45.
We might have to bring in digital thermometer and start. We're drinking these beers wrong. We're drinking these all wrong.
I got a chart now here of all the different types of beers. What's
the warmest type of beer they recommend to drink?
This.
Okay.
Yeah, which would be. Stout or porter, strong lager, Belgian double or cask ale. So kind of big, heavy, strong.
Probably brings out stronger notes, whatever the beer is.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I smell it, I get peanut butter and cocoa pebbles.
Cocoa pebbles.
I don't know why. It might be.
And it is chocolate. There is chocolate also, right?
Yeah.
Cocoa pebbles or fruity pebbles?
Cocoa.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that's right up.
You should start writing.
My first time ever.
Why don't you start writing Beer Advocate reviews?
No, because every other one.
Throw a cocoa pebbles in there.
You know what every other one will be? It's summer beer. It's a fall beer. It's good after a hot day. All right. So next up, what do we got? We're going to talk about the latest Business Central news.
Yeah. All right. Hope you're ready for a shot of Business Central. We're going to start off some news pertaining to the latest Business Central online update that was deployed around the end of September lot of environments we saw getting updated around September 26th or so, 27th. There were 11 platform hot fixes, 67 application hot fixes, many Czech version localization hot fixes, 6 for the US, and then a smattering of other miscellaneous localization updates. There were also 4 feature changes included with this particular update. And kind of in the weeds a little bit here, but the one is, I think it's newsworthy. It's just said, the reference is, it extend GL posting aggregations. And you're like, what? Well, here, there has always existed a table in Business Central called the Inventory Posting Buffer Table. This sits at the center of how general ledger entries get aggregated or summed up together when transactions are posted in the inventory related. They have refactored this whole table to make it extensible. Because the previous version did not allow for any changes to be made to how the GL entries were aggregated as transactions were posted. So there may be reasons that app developers or ISVs want to change how entries get created and posted. Maybe don't sum these up, you know, by GL account or whatever. So now you can extend or customize how that's done. So probably not something every, you know, an end user cares about, but that could be really important for partners or ISV developers to know that they can now change that.
Is that common in Nav? Either of you know?
Well, what we generally advise people to do is stay away from changing how the system generates and posts geometries, right? Like there's...
Because it works?
Because it's very difficult to do. You're getting, in the old object world, you had to get into the source code objects and change the standard Microsoft functionality, which then makes it very difficult to get any support from Microsoft because you've changed how that. So if you get an entry that's out of balance or right, not totaling correctly or something, Microsoft's going to say, wow, you changed it.
We can't help you.
So now, they're saying you can change it. You can extend it. You still can't change the core, right, anymore in BC Online, but you can modify it. So also it allows a couple more changes. These are more quick. Users with a device license assigned can now set up jobs to run as scheduled tasks in the job queue. I found that a little weird just because why would a device license user
need it
be in the client setting up job queue entries? But I'm sure there's a scenario for it. Also, a change regarding the copying of links when posting general journals. Didn't say exactly what that was, but probably some improvements there. And then, again, no detailed entries. Get reference information for customer ledger entry through posting. I don't know what that means.
There's no info, did you?
No.
Okay, yeah, make sure I wasn't the only one.
No, it said there's no detailed info. So that's 22.5. Should be deployed to most environments unless you had some sort of extension conflict that you have to resolve first, but most environments should have that by now.
All right. Well, let's see what I got then. So I just want to make everybody aware that the public preview is made available early in September for Business Central 2023 R2. The Business Central launch event is from October 10th to the 12th. There's going to be 35 sessions. We'll include a link in the show notes for everybody to register. And last, but definitely not least, one of the friends of the podcast, Dr. Martin Karlovich, who's been on the podcast from Netronic, is conducting research for his annual State of the Business Central report. And then he will share the results at Directions EMEA 2023. So if you want to contribute to a survey, I'll put a link in the show notes. Everybody can try it out and contribute.
Yeah.
What else you got, Ken?
Yeah, just one more little note on the next update that's going to be coming out in late October will be a major update with new features, a lot of new features, a lot of new functionality, 51 total features included. I don't know if they're all going to be released this month, but the vast majority will. And just again, every time a major release comes out, I like to explain these steps. If you're running BC Online and you get an update from an email from Microsoft that says your environment's going to get updated, our recommended advice is to, one, create a fresh sandbox from your production environment. Two, schedule your production environment to be updated out some date out in the future. Three, let the sandbox get updated. Test that sandbox. And then once you're happy, reschedule your production environment so that it gets updated.
Sounds good to me. The look on Mark's face is like, is that right? I couldn't tell if he was.
It is right. No, I agree. There's some things potentially in between, right? Like after you make, when the sandbox goes through, we're not just validating if it actually goes through that the code's correct. We don't have to make any potential changes to any extensions or add-ons that everything goes through, but also just normal testing, test the normal things you would test to make sure everything's working.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's testing. Anyways, yes, we're right on. But the point is that if you do nothing, this is the public service announcement. If you do nothing and don't, all of your environments may get updated whenever Microsoft schedules them, which could be on a Wednesday night. So you come in on Thursday and your environment's updated, and maybe you have user-defined permission sets in there for users, and all of a sudden some new permission sets got added as part of this new release and your users can't get in. That's probably the number one most common support issue that we see with updates is that. Custom user-defined permission sets haven't been updated to include some of the new permissions, and there are a list of objects or permissions that need to get added as part of this. So,
makes a lot of sense. Well, all right then. So next up, we've got the cage match. Are you fellas ready?
Yeah, Mark Hike, you're going down.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, why don't we get ready to rumble? It's that time. It's the MRP cage face-off, where Mark and Ken are going to be going and talking about the keys to successful MRP automation in Business Central. Each one is going to say something, and then the first person is going to go say something, and then the person after them is going to try to one up whatever that person said. So,
and then you're going to
I'll decide which is that round.
Mm-hmm. We're going to
I'll keep tally, and at the end I'll let you know. All right, Mark, you're up first. What's your number one?
Sounds good. Categorize your parts. So my number one has to do with early on planning. What are the different types of parts that you're looking to buy and make? Is it make to stock? Is it make to order? How are you looking at these parts? Each category of these parts can be handled differently with different parameters, different reordering policies. If it's make to order, is it also a reordering policy of order? Is it a reorder point, a maximum quantity? We have lot for lot. We have these different reordering policies that can handle different parts, whether it's a manufacturing part that we want to keep to stock, whether it's a manufacturing part that we want to make to order, right? We can set these different parameters and set these different categories on these different parts to make sure that we're having a successful implementation. Not only do we want to set these, but a lot of times I see people set them once and never look back. Continue to look at these as you set the parameters on your items to make subtle changes, to make differences in maybe safety stock or reorder points, so that you continually update these so that the system is giving you the information you want.
Ken, what do you got to up that?
Great point. I will go with define your location codes carefully when you're setting up the system. One of the biggest things, so when you look at in terms of MRP, right, what it's really trying to do is make sure that you have enough supply to meet your demand. But it looks at everything within per location code. So a lot of times what people will do is they'll set up a main warehouse location, But then they may have another location code for returns or quarantine or quality hold or overstock. MRP will not run well at all, effectively, if you've got these other locations that are really a part of this one major distribution center, right? That balances supply and demand. So if you've got your location code set up incorrectly, it's going to produce wildly unexpected results.
All right, all right. Ken, you get to go next then.
Well, you're going to
quiet. I'm not quiet. Yeah, nobody's going to know. And at the end, I'll let you guys know what's going on.
All right. Okay, so I go first here. All right. My number two is when you're implementing MRP in Business Central, do not attempt to turn on MRP automation for all items at this onset. Start with a small subset of items that you can manage so that you can see what suggestions it's creating. Fine tune those suggestions. And then once everyone's comfortable and understands why and how it's producing these suggestions, then start to deploy this for more items as you go forward.
Mark, what do you got to talk there?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is data accuracy, right? And by data accuracy, I mean, are your on-hand quantities correct? Are you closing out stuff? A lot of people leave open sales return orders that never come back. A lot of people will leave out their open sales orders, back orders that they've never shipped in the past, or purchase orders that never fully closed. Those type of things will affect how MRP is looking at supply and demand. So you need to make sure you're going back, updating purchase orders that you never received something. If it's a back order sales order, update that so that you're not, to show that you no longer plan to ship that, so that the system can correctly determine if you need to buy or make that item.
Right. Understood. Throw us with your next one now.
Lead times. My next one is lead times. I wanted to, for manufacturing or for purchased items. For purchased items, you're looking at the lead time on the item, or you could potentially put the lead times down to the suppliers to make sure that that's accurate so that you're getting this inventory in time. For manufacturing, you're looking at your routings. You're looking at the setup time on the routing, the run time, the wait time on the routing, the move time on the routing. You also have queue time on your work centers or machine centers that you can have that can give you that accurate, adds up to the lead time for those items. Without accurate lead times, you're never going to get the material in when you need to make it so that you can get the shipments out on time.
What's your rebuttal, Ken?
It's funny. I don't disagree with anything. So my next one is, to make sure that when you go about this, when you're trying to automate MRP, that you have defined clearly different individual and team member roles. So who on the team is responsible for planning, right? Overall, who does production planning and manages production orders? Who does purchasing of raw materials? A lot of times you go into organizations and it may not be clear, or different people, they're all kind of doing it together. A lot of people may be stepping on each other's toes. There's not a clear line in the sand that separates who's responsible for what. And usually that's just a recipe for confusion, because everyone right now, they're all having to do this in a structured manner and no one really knows who's doing what. So to create those clear boundaries, so that each person knows what they're responsible for.
Not bad. Just taking some notes here, swinging back and forth. Now Ken gets to hit
back,
Mark with another
back
one.
That's me, huh? All right. Set realistic expected delivery dates on sales orders. So let's say that, you get an order in from a customer, and you say, all right, when would you like this delivered? And they go, well, I'd like it in 2 weeks. So you set your requested delivery date or expected delivery date for 2 weeks out. But everyone in the company knows that that's impossible. based on how long it takes to get the raw materials and to actually produce it. Maybe the production cycle time is 2 weeks, right? All that's going to do when you automate MRP is tell you that you're late. And you should have created these POs earlier, and everything is going to say that it's due today. And it really becomes, it makes the data almost useless because everything is late, everything is an emergency, everything needs to get done today. So you have to be relatively accurate on what is a realistic delivery date that we think we can target and actually get this done by that date.
So Mark, what do you got to top setting realistic date?
I agree with it. I'm going to actually add to the dates. So everything in the system is so date specific when MRP runs, right? So your sales orders must, you know, you're going to line up supply and demand, purchasing dates, sales dates, manufacturing due dates. Everything kind of lines up one after another when MRP runs. So many times people don't go back and update dates. You should feel, you know, you should feel like you can go back and update dates. To keep things accurate, you want to update if a sales date changes. If purchasing is, if a purchase order is going to come in late, you might want to update the purchase order date and the sales order date, right? So if purchasing is coming in late, you know what that's going to affect. You should update the different dates within the system so that MRP can stay in line, but keep giving you accurate dates on when things will be coming in and when to make things.
So you're adding to what Ken threw out first.
One upping it.
Just piggybacking.
That's
upping. I gotta score this here, you know.
I'm enhancing what he said.
All right. What do you got next then, Mark?
A little bit, this one's kind of a little bit of a step of a outside of MRP. It's more of how should you run MRP MPS? Should they be run together? Should they be run separate, right? The master production scheduling versus material requirements planning. Also, many people just run both at the same time, which is great. And maybe they run it 5 days a week. You kind of want to plan that out and come up with a plan is how often are you going to run MRP MPS? Are you going to run MPS on itself early in the week and then run MRP afterwards for all the different, you know, down the line items that need to be bought and purchased? So coming up with a plan and understanding what MRP is, what MPS is, and how often you want to run it can make a big deal in how you're managing your inventory.
Nice, nice. Sir Ken, what's your topper?
My topper is that a lot of times if you're running the Calculate Regenerative Plan in the planning worksheet, it comes back with this long list of suggestions. And it says, oh, you should create a new production order for 50 of these widgets. And a lot of times people look at that data and it's not clear. Why is it telling me to create 50? And my tip is use the item availability by event page from the planning worksheet right there to view a list of all of the supply and demand transactions that are scheduled and the expected running on hand total of that item to see why is it telling you, like, what's the demand and on what dates? And then why is it telling, you know, here's the supply replenishment to do that. So it gives you, you know, at some point you ultimately trust that the system is creating the suggestions that you want. But especially as you're getting started, this page is helpful to see, oh, here's all the activity that's going on. And this does make sense that we add, you know, production order for 50.
Gotcha.
Just, I couldn't agree more with Ken on that one. It wasn't so long ago that I actually showed him where that page was and how to use it.
I got a knife fight going on here now.
Okay. So one of the issues that people deal with a lot of times in MRP is long lead times. Right, especially where it may take you, let's say, 3 months to purchase raw materials and go through a production cycle. And you expect that you're going to have customer orders for those, but those orders aren't here yet. So how do you build to that? How can you use MRP to tell you that you should be making some of these, even when there appears to be no demand? That is to use the demand forecast. So there is a function called demand forecasts, and you can go in there. And again, you're not going to forecast every item, right? But maybe some key finished good items that have long lead times. You go in there and you put in a projection of about how many you anticipate you're going to be selling over these next few months. And that way, when you run the calculate regenerative plan, you can tell it that you want to use the forecast. And it will add that projected demand into there so that you can start planning for those things today.
So I got a question about demand forecasting then. Why not forecast every item?
Well, a lot of times you may, if like, for example, if you're getting sales orders in and you can deliver out of stock that you have based on your other reordering policy, or you have a very short production cycle time, you really don't need to forecast. If you say, hey, Mr. Customer, I can get this to you by next Tuesday, and you know you can produce those between now and then.
Gotcha.
You really wouldn't need to do much forecasting. Or it's a truly like a, you know, made to order environment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where you're not producing anything to stock.
Right. And a lot of times when you're using demand forecast, you're getting help from your customers, right? Of what they're projecting and what they're expecting to take from you. And not everything is that, you know, organized where they know, hey, this is how much every time we're going to need. A lot of stuff is less, you know, demand driven by the customer, so you don't need it at that point.
Yeah, nice piggyback there, Mark.
Calm down, Kat. That size chart.
Sorry, I'm a little fired up.
Yeah, I got to get control of this thing here.
If I wanted to piggyback, I would have added blanket orders and all that
else. All right, mark it up.
All right. Next one is for me is reduce the noise. So when you're using the planning worksheet and running the calculate regenerative plan, a lot of times users will look at it and say there's way too many action messages. So I like to try to help them. There's a lot of parameters on the items that can help reduce those number of action messages. Lot accumulation period used when you're using a reorder point of lot for lot, reorder policy of lot for lot. This lot accumulation period allows you to start at one point of demand, go out, let's say I put in 3 weeks, aggregate that so that it can say through those 3 weeks, this is the total demand, and get the supply all in on one date instead of being date specific for each one. Rescheduling period can really help you with a lot of people get those cancel new, right? Everybody hates it when they see the cancel new. So what do you do when you get a cancel this purchase order and create it the very next day as a new one? Put in a rescheduling period for a certain amount of time. It will take those, and instead of canceling new, it will simply just reschedule it instead of giving you a new purchase order number. Dampener period, dampener quantity. This will reduce the noise, right? It will allow you to not update the date. It won't change the date, might not change the quantity, as long as those are being reduced, right? If the quantity is going down, a dampener quantity will keep the system from making any recommendation to change it. Dampener period, if the date is pushing out on the demand and it's within the dampener period, the system won't tell you to move it or do anything with it. The last one is the time bucket, which is really just used for fixed reorder point and maximum quantity. This helps reduce the noise the very same way that the lot accumulation period does for lot. It's very similar that for fixed reorder points and maximum quantities. This will reduce the number of action messages, reduce the time your people are in the system, and just overall make them a lot happier and understand better what the system's telling them to do.
That was a strong number six, Kevin.
That was six, seven, eight.
I think you threw like four things in there. I mean, is that legal? Is that, hey,
if he wants to use them as one,
it goes under. No, it's legal because the noise.
Maybe he doesn't have enough for the next one then. So,
I don't know. I hear some booze from the crowd, but well, I guess that's going to go, huh?
Yep. Two lines left. So, all right, Ken.
See Mark weakening over here a little bit.
It's his turn or mine? I don't remember.
You.
It's me?
Yeah, you're next.
All right.
Starting to look a little weak.
Listen, that was strong last time, so you know you got a top dead now.
Are you sweating? I see some sweat on your forehead there.
We both had discussions on lead times. Well, one of the hardest thing about lead times is long manufacturing lead times, trying to know when you should purchase the material. you can use routing link codes in the system on a routing to attach specific material to a routing step. So if you need this later on in the production process, you won't have to order earlier and you won't have that on hand sitting there if it's a 3 month lead time, if you don't need it for until the second month of production. Routing link codes can be used to help with back flushing and all of that, but it is also very important with MRP to help with your lead times and getting the material in at the right time.
Lead times are very important. However, more important than that, Michael, is to make sure that you and all of your users understand the impact of changing your planned shipment date on a sales order after MRP has already run, right? So you've got customer made this, place this order with you. You planned the production, you planned for some purchases for it. And now you, someone goes in and changes the planned delivery date. It could be they move it in or they move it out. And those would have two potentially different impacts on what the system's going to suggest for you, right? Possible scenario is that they move in the date a week. The system says, well, I can't reschedule this. You started the production. We're going to have to create a whole new production order for this because this one's not going to be due until a week later. So there, you have to be very careful with how you update those planned shipment dates on the sales orders after planning's been done.
I feel like people, I might have mentioned that a little earlier, but good detail.
I wish people could see what I get to see. All right, last round. And Ken gets to start off the last round.
It's me, huh? All right.
Well, before that, though, how close do you guys think it is?
Pretty close.
You think it's pretty close?
No. I think it's fairly close, but I'm confident.
All right.
Didn't really sound like it, but okay.
Well, I don't want to say.
Like, I'm a winner.
Okay, my last one.
I think it's over before
and,
the last.
And perhaps my greatest suggestion of all time.
Uh-oh.
In order for the system to create realistic dates that you can complete production by, you must have detailed, accurate routings. So, you know, if you're thinking, I'm just going to create a one-line routing that just says assembly and it takes 5 minutes per piece to get done, you're going to have a very difficult time scheduling and planning that. As opposed to if you have six routing operations with 30 minutes of setup time and then run time. And also maybe if you're painting, put in 24 hours for wait time so that it doesn't assume as soon as you finish painting it, you can proceed to the next step, right? So if you don't have a detailed routing set up, and a lot of companies don't because they operate lean and they're like, let's just get something in there so we can get some cost put into there for some labor and overhead. Don't expect MRP to do as much for you as you might have hoped.
All right, Mark.
Yeah, my last one is just the going back to
a little bit. I'd like to use one of my extra ones. I've got some extra ones here.
I got two left. I'm going to give them a two for one. My last one is the reordering policy, right? We discussed it a little bit earlier, but really, MRP, everything that's running off of it, with if you have all the other stuff we've discussed, is what type of items. Know what type of items and what you want to buy. Fixed reorder quantity, maximum quantity, order, lot for lot. Make sure you understand what each of those do and when they should be used. One of the ones people use that get confused with is order, right? Order is going to use reservations in the system, and it's always going to link supply and demand. So if I actually have on hand and I put an order in for something marked order, it's still going to tell me to make or buy that item, even when I have it on hand. So just making sure you understand what all of those mean so that you can set it up to get the right results. The last one I'm going to throw in there is this planning flexibility field.
Throw the flag.
We'll talk about it after. We'll talk about it after.
Great tool, but dangerous. So this right, we on purchase order lines, on production order lines, you have this ability to flag this unlimited or none. If you, depending on what you set that to, you can basically say, have MRP skip over this. Don't even worry, right? Never tell me to do anything with it. Never tell me to move it. Never tell me to do it. This is a PO that's never going to change. Great. Reduces the noise. One more tool to reduce the noise. The gotcha that I'm going to tell people to be careful for is if you are changing dates and a sales order comes in and they move that date in front, MRP is not going to see that. Or if the demand goes completely away, MRP is not going to know that, and it's going to continue to tell you to use it. So it's a great tool, but you have to really understand it and build stuff around it so that you're not.
Is this a cage match or a training class?
What are you trying to say? We got a lion versus a cat. All right. So
it's a knockout. I think we had a knockout, my opinion.
All right. So Mark, I had to I gotta ding you for the last one, right? When you did the 4-1, I gave you the point for that. Okay. The 4-1, whatever that was, a couple questions ago. Mm-hmm. Not with the last. Can't do 2-for-1 in the last one.
Twofer?
Point deduction.
I gave you a 4-for. But without that last one, I mean, you guys are going pretty neck and neck, even though I had to ding you for the piggyback one. So it was 5-3, Ken.
Wow.
Woo!
Yeah. I'm telling you why you lost. You piggybacked that one. I can't give you the point if you piggyback.
I mean,
and then you 2-for-1 on the last one when you already did 4-for-1.
Wealth of information.
Absolutely. Points are as valid as can be.
Back in.
But he tried
2-for-1. He almost tried to bite my ear off in the fifth round.
Just to be clear, I'll accept the judge's ruling, but two of Ken's points were actually the same ones I made later on. He made the same lead times he jumped on that I already had. And there's one other one. Just
okay.
To be clear, I'm not a sore loser. I'll give him the victory. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, you both walk in that fine line with the rules or whatever.
Complete. Let's go back to drinking beer.
Should be the right temperature now. All right. That was good times. Good, interesting. Fun. And then, next up, we're going to talk about AI, everybody's most popular topic.
And snack,
yes. All right, we're back for the AI snack time segment, and we're drinking peanut butter and milk stout nitro beer, and we are also pairing that with, what do you call them? Oots pretzel bites, peanut butter filled. So I'd say it works well together. Seems to be a fan favorite.
Yeah, I think these peanut butter pretzels probably pair well with a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so before we jump into what we have for AI or whatnot, I want to push Mr. Mark on the spot. What's your feeling on AI? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Are
you not scared of it?
From hearing just a little chit-chat from you two, I probably fit somewhere in the middle, right? Like, I'm not scared of it. I think it can be good. I think there's areas where it probably will have very little. I think AI will probably touch almost everything. But in some areas, very, very little, right? So I'm not as strong.
You're not thinking of it every day. Not like on the forefront of your mind and on your radar generally every day.
No.
Do you use AI?
Well, that's a trick question. I'm sure I do in a bunch of different things, but right.
Do you use AI? Like, do you go on ChatGPT and ask about that?
No, I do not. Now, I do think, like, if I'm reading something once in a while or Google something, read some, I do sometimes read it and go, I'm reading an AI answer. Like, I think you can still easily tell, like, when it's like a ChatGPT answer versus someone actually writing it.
Interesting.
So I do notice that when I'm reading about stuff and you know, can tell pretty quickly sometimes, at least I think I can right now. The day I can't sell will make me a little more scared.
Are you for AI furthering the advancement of everything or no?
Yeah, I mean, I am. I think I until I see a reason why not, right? Like, I mean, if you're going to tell me that nobody's going to have, you know, all jobs are going to be gone for a certain class, then no, I'm not 100% for it in that way.
Wow. Every new technology, though.
Right.
But I first hated the invention of tractors.
Understood, but
typewriter repair people didn't like the creation of
The word processor or whatever it was, yeah.
But look, they're still thriving today, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
But they moved to something different, right? Like there's, I do think every, you know, when you hear people say, well, AI is going to leave no one in jobs, I think the job market shifts, right? So I people are going to find jobs and people are going to put people to work no matter how much AI.
And new jobs can be created.
Correct. Right.
That don't exist today.
But just to be clear, you're on board with AI.
Yes. I have nothing against it as of right now.
Two to one in this room, baby.
I
live
with AI. That's what I'm.
Well, you don't. Well, I would say you're not totally on board with AI right now. You're very skeptical.
I just don't think. I think there was an extreme amount of hype over the past 6 months that is a little premature. I mean, there is progress being made, and I mean, everyone is trying to move as fast as they possibly can to produce what they can because they believe it's the next internet, you know, the next big thing.
Well,
money and if they're left behind, they're dead. So, I mean, there's.
But I would say you're skeptical. Where you were, a lot of people are like, AI, let me use it. I'm going to use it. And where you're more along the lines of, well, somebody's behind it. It's got to be biased.
I'm skeptical of a lot. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's just your nature.
Speaking of changes, to any Microsoft partners out there, if you've been a member of the Microsoft Cloud Partner Program, which was renamed in 2022, 1 year ago, from the Microsoft Partner Network, right? You are now part of the Microsoft AI Cloud Partner Program.
Wow.
So Microsoft has converted everyone from the Microsoft Cloud Partner Program to the Microsoft AI Cloud Partner Program. So they just put AI in
there.
Is what they did. And it's really the same program. It's just called, they wanted to put AI in the name. And they've added a seventh solution partner designation type called data and AI. And then added some AI content to a couple of the other ones. And there's also there's a page I would recommend if anyone's interested in AI as a Microsoft partner. There's a page called AI for Partners homepage. And this is kind of should be your starting point. There's resources on there if you're interested in developing or delivering AI solutions for your customers, including like an AI transformation partner playbook, how to incorporate AI into your solutions, modernizing your apps with AI, mixed reality development, and you can even apply to join the Security Copilot Design Advisory Council.
Wow.
So if you're really, really into it, you know, there's a lot. You could dive pretty deep right now into some of that stuff.
It sounds like a Mark thing.
Yeah, he's right up his alley.
Oh, yeah.
He's ready for it. Well, speaking of Microsoft AI or whatnot, so Microsoft Windows 11 was introduced, and for people who don't know, Copilot, which is Microsoft's AI application, is now in Windows in preview. So it's going to, let's see what they put here. Their exact words are, empower you to create faster, complete tasks with ease, and lessen your cognitive load, making once complicated tasks simple. So Copilot will be in virtually everything that you do then within Windows, right? I think in the video it was play this Spotify pot list, Spotify playlist pot list. And it did it. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. You got another Microsoft thing or nope?
No.
All right, let's go down my list.
Ran through my list pretty quick there.
So old Mr. Microsoft Bill Gates says AI will be teaching kids literacy within 18 months in a fireside chat at the ASU plus GSV Summit in San Diego. Gates explained that the AIs will get the ability to be as good as a tutor as any human ever could have been. So, thoughts?
So teachers are done?
Tutors.
Not teachers,
not
tutors.
Yeah. He said tutors. I'm not, you know, I don't want to quote him wrong, but he said tutors right now.
How is it? What's the application that they're, how are they doing it?
I would imagine, I would be there some sort of app, right, that a kid, you know, goes onto and it can interact and say, you probably can do it now in chat.
When you said it's going to be teaching
He said
literacy
within 18 months,
not 18 month old children.
No, within 18 months.
Within 18 months, there will be AI teaching literacy to kids.
Yes.
Okay.
He says AIs will get to the ability to be as good as tutor, to be as good as of a tutor as any human ever could be.
So if I make a comment that says, I believe that statement, and it sounds to me like that will replace teachers. Am I out of line there?
No. Could you see AI replacing teachers?
Sure.
I would hope not. Could I see it?
Well, would AI take up?
But would I ever want to send, like, you know, my child to something that's purely AI to learn outside of school?
But what if the AI was not biased like a teacher could be? Obviously, all teachers are biased towards some things. Well, I'm just saying.
Like the Dallas Cowboys versus the Chicago Bears.
Right. Taking it political or something? But
no, it's not political. But I mean, let's say the teacher's biased towards, I don't know, eating, being vegan or saving global, I don't know, cats. Right? You know what I mean? Where AI is not as biased towards it and says that everything needs to be saved or we need
it's focusing on just reading, learning right. how to read or learning how to do math.
Right.
Here's how you need to learn how to do algebra.
Right. Because I guess you can interpret history differently. Everybody could. Maybe AI is just telling you how history was.
Yeah. I personally just think we've gone too far without kids getting interaction that I don't, right? Whether it can do as well, right? Teaching as well as a tutor or a teacher. I haven't seen it yet. I would be skeptical.
But let's say you had a 45-minute class, reading class or math class. Could the AI be delivering the lesson for 20 to 25 minutes? And then afterward, the teacher assists students with answering questions.
Or during the lesson.
Helping them based on what the lesson was.
But is that really AI then? What is it? The AI piece is just a computer program.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And the whole AI video is the answers and questions of the kids. Otherwise, it's just me putting a recording out saying, here you go, right?
Yeah.
So that to me, I
well,
I'm sure someone that knows awesome with the teacher can get there, but
if it works in tandem with the teacher, maybe, I don't know. Maybe the AI goes around answering the questions and the teacher's delivering.
But I believe it. And I believe it's a natural use of AI is teaching and instruction and helping provide the steps for how to accomplish something. I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable use of it.
We just don't want it to be biased, right? So speaking of that.
Go ahead.
He's leading the witness.
Yeah.
I see where
ChatGPT's political bias has been highlighted in a study. Let me read to you a little bit here. It says, a study conducted by computer and information science researchers from the UK and Brazil has raised concerns about the objectivity of ChatGPT. The researchers claim they have discovered substantial political bias in ChatGPT's responses, leaning towards the left side of the political spectrum. This is published in the journal Public Choice last week. It says the study conducted by Fabio Motaki and Vladimir Pino and Victor Rodriguez argues that the presence of political bias in AI-generated content could perpetuate existing biases found in traditional media. Is anybody surprised that they found bias in?
No, I don't think you had to spend any money to conduct a study to see that.
Oh, nowadays you got to. You can't just believe anybody says.
Didn't we? We did our own.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
We did our own in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We did some tests and it was pretty revealing. Right?
Yeah. So that's interesting. But that's what scares me about AI.
Now, why is that? Do you know why?
Controlled by humans.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't biased. The humans that are controlling the AI are biased.
Yeah. What isn't biased then, though?
The original AI that they came out with. And go do some research. About 5-10 years ago, they came out with AI. And they were some people were shocked by the results
of what
it was doing and what it did. And they decided they needed to put some guardrails on it. So this isn't version one that we're seeing right now with like ChatGPT or whatever, right? That version one was like 5 years ago. So
did you know they do not allow ChatGPT to access websites, external links? If you put a link into ChatGPT and say, I don't know, tell me about this webpage, it will not go to that webpage and tell you about it. It says I cannot access external.
That probably makes sense because that could be like a virus or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
That link.
Well, you're just copying and pasting. Yeah, I guess. Well, can't really. I don't know. You can't get a virus. You have to actually click it to download. Because,
yeah, it's just using its existing set of knowledge that it has. That's data that they have decided to feed into it versus other data that they have not decided to feed into it. So it has its finite set of knowledge that it's basing its responses off of. It's not actually, what you'd be basically doing with it is if you said, go to this site and figure this out, you're actually adding more content there to its knowledge base.
Well, you could also say, you know, if it's like a math site, a math page, whatever, that, you know, is describing some sort of calculus function, you could say, hey, I don't understand what's going on this web page. Can you explain this to me in layman's terms? Right. You'd actually have to copy what's on that page and paste it in and then ask that question.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And if you're, I mean, so if you have to paste it in, I mean, it is. I've never done that. Does it, if you pasted something in, it's just incorrect math. Would it just say this is incorrect math at this point? Does it know that?
It usually lies to you and tells you some answer that it comes up with.
Well, the new new version of ChatGPT is something like 80 to 90%. It passes the bar like 80 to 90% faster than every human. So it passes all these tests way quicker than, you know, humans, but it's getting there, I think. But
we're almost there.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like programming. Really.
Have you ever seen iRobot?
A robot?
Will Smith?
No.
Oh my God, you guys are killing me. You know, we're just on two different levels here with this AI. You guys got to see that movie.
Have you seen Office Space?
I have not.
Well, come on.
I'm trying to get through Seinfeld.
If you're watching,
I've never seen The Office either.
If you're watching iRobot before Office Space, then there's a real issue here.
Yeah,
I agree.
Oh, too funny. All right, last but not least, this is not a Microsoft thing, but Mark Zuckerberg said that, who's the owner of Meta, Facebook, that type of thing, says AI will be built into all of Meta's products. So
it just sounds like hype, bluster, marketing.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything, does it? I mean, what is it?
Isn't it kind of already? I mean, don't people assume it is?
I don't think it is. I'm trying to think what its products are.
And what does that
Facebook
mean,
Instagram? Right? I think that it's just like going to be like a ChatGPT type of thing on their website. Here's what I envision. I told this to Ken. Here's what I think of AI, right? I think if for Business Central, I get Business Central, I'm a new customer, I'm a one-person guy in my garage, I get the, you know, I load it up and I say, all right, create, I don't know, go through and create this purchase order, open up a purchase order, or configure whatever, manufacturing, and it asks you questions, and it configures it. To me, that's like AI for Business Central. Is that coming?
It's all right. I mean, the assisted setup and stuff, the way they do that, they've tried to already do some of that stuff, but I don't know that it will ever be perfect. I don't know how you would, right? There's no set.
If we were able
to interact with that list of questions that you could ask that I think could make you set up the system 100% one way.
Well, if humans can ask the questions, why can't ChatGPT or can't AI ask the questions?
Guess it could, but some answers have more than one answer. Some questions have more than one answer.
It's true.
Guess it could, but I
like, I want to open up my computer and I want to type in.
I don't have a list that could do that right now.
Yeah, I want to open up my computer and I want to say to it, all right, create a purchase order in Business Central. and it just pops up Business Central and a purchase order pops up, and it could ask me what I want to do, and I could say to it, or I could just enter it, I guess. You know, he wants to laugh, but he's trying not to.
You're missing a little bit of detail there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but
who's the vendor? What is the item? How many do you want to buy?
Right, but are those things that AI can ask and then configure? That's the question.
I guess. So is there an opportunity for physically disabled to be assisted by AI to allow them to create purchase orders when maybe they otherwise wouldn't have been able to?
Excellent application.
If you tell me that you want to use it because you don't want to click the mouse button and type the vendor name and an item name because that's too much work for you.
No.
Then we're in a little bit of a gray.
No, but you got to think further, right? Like if I'm able to do that, then eventually you can have your glasses on, whatever it is, and you can say while you're walking outside, create this for me, so you can actually, you know, you're not construed to having to do it on a computer.
Okay, I got.
Will you cross the street while you're racing?
I don't know.
Understand what he's trying to say. We probably got to watch iRobot, would be my guess.
No. But you've seen, like, Google had the Google Lens, like Microsoft has HoloLens. They're obviously going to get to the point where they're like glasses on our face.
Is of course.
Well, yeah, that's the goal, right?
Chipping our brain. You're just going to have to think about it.
Yeah, who would ever thought about that?
Just think, and your PO is going to get emailed to the vendor.
I don't trust the Neuralink. What? Right.
And I said, all they got to do is think. The vendor just has to think, and next thing you know, it's at your door.
There it is.
No, but if AI is so powerful, though, would it never be able to set up MRP and Business Central for you?
AI could be used to do MRP.
I think it could strategically come up with a plan to hit your item, to set your items up the correct way, know enough what data it's looking at, figuring out what reorder points, things like that. Yeah, probably.
Start looking for a new job.
I'm no longer a micro. I lost it. I'm good.
but that's the point, though. You got to think outside the box with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the stuff that you're normally accustomed to. It's going to be different things.
Well, in a planning and purchasing environment, most of the time what happens is there's a conflict and someone has to make a decision, right? And you want that person is still going to have to make a decision. I've got two production orders that need this machine, and one of these orders is going to get out on time and one is not. Which one?
No, sure.
Oh, you could set up a priority. You could, but let's just say you don't, right? Someone still needs to make a decision. Do you work overtime? Do you outsource one of the jobs?
Wouldn't AI take
the machine speed?
But wouldn't AI take into consideration all those things
take everything? Yeah,
because
it's been working two double shifts already, and you really don't want them working a third double shift in a row. No, the answer is no, Michael. It doesn't know everything. Does it know that it's supposed to be snow tonight and no one's going to want to work 4 extra hours because there's 8 inches of snow coming?
Please tell me AI is going to take over the job of weather people. Please tell me that's going to happen.
They just started construction on the main street, and that's going to impact our ability to deliver trucks that route. So they're going to have to go a different route because of a major construction project.
I think it would.
That's right.
Well, I mean, even now, right, in your Google Maps or Apple Maps, whatever, it tells you where.
That's a specific mapping application.
No, but yeah, but right.
MRP. You're saying in the MRP, can't get this truck out in rush hour tomorrow morning because of that big construction project that just started.
Right.
No way.
No.
You're going too far.
You're going, Yeah, right. You're making steps beyond what you can control, right? At that point, you're making decisions before things happen. In the instance you're talking about, where there's a traffic jam the next day, you don't know that when you're working today, but nobody, even the human wouldn't know that, I guess. So,
right. But wouldn't AI know it before the human?
No.
Why not? Well, they would tap into.
I think what Ken was saying, there's certain decisions that no matter how many priorities you take into account, it's still. The human might make a different decision, even if you set all the priorities, right? If we're going to set something out and, okay, In this instance, the cost is more. Am I willing to take the extra cost or be late on delivering something? All right. Could the computer be set to make that decision for you? Sure. But is the human, might they make a different answer than what they told the computer? Yes.
But which one do you think is the more of a probability of being correct?
I'm going with the human in this instance because they're the one that chops on
it. Coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Make that decision.
Coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, here we go.
Or any football team, okay. Right? Do you think AI would make better decisions than the coach? Every time, I guess?
No.
Every time you said no.
Because you can't, AI doesn't look at a player and know that he's gassed. And he's got to come out and you can't push him anymore. He's run the ball 25 times. I mean.
Well, no, but AI, I think, will say that it'll take the average of every running back and say after, like baseball, right?
But does it know that he hurt his ankle four plays earlier?
And how bad is that ankle hurt?
If it tells him, I guess.
It will know that. Yes.
No, it knows the exact severity.
You can challenge him. Like, it's going to know.
It won't know that. It won't know that unless it's told, I guess. That's interesting.
To your point, sports analytics are becoming more and more. Yeah. So, but
I hate it. Yeah.
You use the term all the time. No.
Well, I mean,
it's why you see football teams whose their offense hasn't done anything all day. It's fourth and one, and they go for it on the, deep in their own zone. And you're going, what are you doing? And after the game, the coach says, well, analytics say that our chance of getting that first down on a fourth and a half a yard is 82%. Yeah, but have you watched your offense play football today? Yeah. They haven't done anything. You've been getting stuffed all day.
It'd be interesting to see.
So now we're talking about the Bears.
Oh
yeah.
Sorry.
Why don't we rank this beer?
Yeah, let's rank the beer. Yeah. You want me to go first?
Yeah, I got my rank here.
Already?
I got it. I've been looking at this while you guys.
You go first.
Debating the world, future of the world. I'm gonna go for Left Hand Brewing Company Peanut Butter Milk Stout 63, which sits comfortably between the Fuel Cafe coffee flavored stout and one point above it, the Kentucky Vanilla Barrel Cream Ale.
Oh, I've tried those before.
One below
those.
That.
Those aren't good.
Really?
That's not a good rating.
I like the coffee stout.
I have a lot of my stouts and whatnots. And
yeah, it's kind of low, though. It's kind of low for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't separate out. Well, this is a better stout than that stout. It's for me, it's just overall drinkability.
Okay.
So my stouts are all in the 60s.
So I'm going to give it probably a considerably higher rating. It's a stout. I like it. The only thing I wish it had a little bit more, and I know it's not going to because of the nature of it, right? I think it would be a little bit better with carbonation. If I could get this beer with the same flavor with carbonation, I would like it a lot better. I'm not a fan of smooth beers, so I guess I'm not a fan of nitro beers, but I'm going to go with 74, solid 74. I like it. I could have a couple. It's heavy. The aroma is amazing. The bottle art is terrible.
Same grade you gave the Steigl Grapefruit Rattler.
Two completely different beers, though. you can't compare those. But yeah, different times for each one. What about you, Mark?
Hey, it's a little more difficult for me. I don't have the same rating scales or know how you guys have been rating stuff. But
so
I would put this beer as right around a 75. And here for me, and I'll reason it out just because I don't have the same ratings as you guys have in this. But this is a beer I would drink at home. In the fall, in the winter, that type of time. It's smooth. I like how smooth it is. But it's also a beer that you're going to have one to two, and that's it.
Yeah.
You're not gonna keep drinking it, but it's very good for that type of night.
Yeah.
For a cold night, having one to two beers, and that's it. You wouldn't want more.
Yeah.
Just for the record, on your first visit to the podcast,
we keep track.
We drank a Boulevard unfiltered wheat beer.
Oh, that's a good beer. What did I
gave it a 91.
Yeah, that makes sense. That yes.
That's his wheelhouse.
I would agree with that ranking still.
I have to say this
beer is super ranking.
Yeah. This beer is considerably better than what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's good. I enjoyed it.
All right, with that, everybody, like the podcast, share the podcast. We appreciate it. And we're going to see you next month. Ken's going to take us home.
Bye-bye.
As we end today's podcast, we want to give a big thank you to everyone who listens, shares this podcast, and leaves us reviews. You've taken a good amount of your time out of your day, and we truly appreciate it. Thanks again. And don't be afraid to email us at marketing@solsyst.com. with your tips for the podcast, or maybe you'd even like to be a guest during an episode.